Okay, great. Are you able to hear me okay? Yeah, good. Thank you. So I wanted to share today about kindness and kindness as the ever presence of kindness, even when we don't realize that it's there. And how it's connected to the deep, deep teaching of emptiness, and why emptiness allows always a possibility of kindness. The reading that was shared, or the phrase that was shared, thank you, Anjana, for that, in our invitation for to sit today, comes from a poem called Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. And I'm going to share the reading by her. She is a poet of Palestinian and white ancestry. Her father was evicted from the land in Palestine. So let me share.
You must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a week. You must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend.
So the last part, the last line of the poem, it says, "It is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend." And that's kindness saying that, right? kindness is saying in her poem, kindness is saying, "It is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend." And in Buddhism, what we might add to that last line is like a shadow or a friend of sorrow. Yeah, because that's what the teaching of emptiness in Buddhism is that kindness cannot be there without sorrow, or sorrow cannot be there without kindness. That this teaching, the very deep teaching of emptiness, empty of anything of a true self nature, is what allows it to be full of everything there that's possible. So if we think about emptiness of sorrow being emptiness of any innate nature of sorrow, then we see that sorrow is made up of non-sorrow elements, right? And that right there in sorrow is also kindness. And the same with kindness, because kindness doesn't have a self nature. It's empty of a solid nature. It changes. And that because of that, in kindness, there's also sorrow. Yeah, because it's empty of anything, it's made up of non-kindness elements. And in there are also the elements of, in kindness, there is also the element of sorrow. So this is a deep teaching of Buddhism, particularly the Heart Sutra in the Mahayana tradition. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form, and it goes on. The Diamond Sutra really takes us deeply into the what you might call the dialectics of emptiness. But even before that, Nagarjuna, who was a Buddhist monk and patriarch from the second century, also really actually taught the verses of the Middle Way and the emphasis and the teaching, deep teaching in that was also about emptiness. What he said is nothing is possible without emptiness. Emptiness makes everything possible. Think about that. Emptiness makes everything possible. The non-self nature of anything makes the ability for everything to happen. Yeah. So this is also, it ties into impermanence. Also one of the three marks of existence in Buddhism, right? So in Buddhism, we've talked about the three marks of existence. In the Mahayana tradition, it would be non-self, impermanence, and awakening. In the Theravada tradition, the three marks of existence are non-self, impermanence, and suffering. So you might think, well, why is that third one different between these two traditions, given that it's all Buddhism? If we understand emptiness, then we understand that that third one, awakening in Mahayana, and the third one of suffering in Theravada, they're part of the same thing, right? Because in awakening, in the lotus is the mud, right? In our tradition in Plum Village, no mud, no lotus, we talk about this a lot, that suffering is actually the path to awakening, right? There are sutras that teach about when given a choice to be reborn in the different realms, that one would want to choose a realm like the human realm that has suffering and not choose a realm of the heavenly realm where there's only joy and no suffering. And we might think as human beings in this realm, that why in the world would I want to be reborn in a realm that has suffering like the human realm and not be reborn in the realm of the heavens where it's all, there's no suffering. And what the teachings tell us is that it's because in the heavenly realm, because there's no suffering, there is no opportunity to gain awakening. In the human realm, because there's suffering, being reborn in the human realm gives us the material to reach awakening. Right? So this is why the mark of existence is, if we say it's awakening, or if we say it's suffering, and we understand emptiness, we really see that they're one and the same, because we cannot have awakening without suffering. This is the mud and the lotus. The lotus cannot grow without the mud. If you take away the mud, there's no lotus. And as the lotus grows, and then it has its it pairs, right? It has its lifespan, and then it disappears. It becomes mud, right? So in the lotus is also mud. You see? So the lotus is not, if the lotus had a permanent identity, a self, a true self nature, it wouldn't be able to change. If a child had a true self nature as a child, they wouldn't be able to grow into an adult, because then they would always be a child. You see? So the very deep meaning of emptiness, allowing everything to be possible, all phenomena to actually be possible. It's so deep. It's a very deep teaching, because it says that because of the non-self nature of everything, this is what allows change to happen. This is what allows us to move from a moment of sadness to a moment of joy. Because that moment of sadness is not something that innately is us. It's not there's no permanent self nature of that sadness. And because that sadness is made up of other elements, right? It's empty of this permanent self. Because it's made up of these non-self elements, it allows the opportunity, the change to occur. And then that allows us to move from sadness to a joy. It allows us to move from a moment of sorrow and grief to a moment of lightness and happiness and openness and spaciousness. So this teaching, this teaching on emptiness, when I saw the poem, I thought, oh, wow, this is so deep. I don't have any idea, of course, if this person is a Buddhist practitioner or not. I did a little bit of reading about her, but it wasn't stated or clear. But what she's saying about, you must touch joy first in order to touch this kindness, is really, this is the teachings. This is what the teachings are trying to get us to understand, that, and the teaching around, we don't want to be reborn in this heavenly realm, because we want to awaken. So we need, you know, it's like we need the ingredients. It's almost like making the cake, right? We need the ingredients to get that yummy, delicious cake to be made. And part of those ingredients is the suffering. Because any one thing that we're now experiencing is not permanent, right? It doesn't have a true self nature, because if it had a true self nature, it would remain permanent, right? So those are the two of the marks of existence. Impermanence, everything, all conditioned phenomena are impermanent, right? All conditioned phenomena have no self nature. And then all conditioned phenomena are either suffering, or if we turn it and take it the other way, it is awakening. Right? Because if someone said to you, everything has a mark of its existence, everything has awakening nature, and you're seeing something that's really horrible, right? That's happening. And you're sitting there thinking, oh, really? I don't see awakening in this, okay? This is not good. But when we look with the eyes of the practice, we can look deeper beyond what we're seeing right there. We can see impermanence. We can see that this will change as well. We can see there's nothing inherent about this staying in this way that we're observing it now. And that even though in the moment it may be suffering, it has the opportunity to become non-suffering. It has the opportunity to come into awakening, right? So this is also this teaching of, in Buddhism, we say reciprocity. Reciprocity meaning we're waiting on something, the other side of something to show up. You know, so I'm doing my hand like this because, you know, in Tai Chi, it's often a circle, right? And as one hand's going this way, the other hand's coming up, right? Right? It's like this, you see, this hand's coming, this hand's going. So it's a receiving, right? It's waiting. One goes and the other one's coming. So there's this, it's like this. There's this continuous, it's waiting on the other to manifest. The other one to manifest is waiting on the other one. And then this one manifests and then the other one manifests, right? And in that we create this energy, right? So this waiting on the other one, it's also what we say is, I'm like this because you're like that, right? I'm like this because you're like that. This reciprocity, this is the emptiness, right? This is the, everything is possible. There are conditions here in me that will manifest into something that may not be me and may not look like me in the very next moment. We all change, right? We, in one moment when we meet a child, we become childlike, and then we meet an adult, and then we become adult-like. We completely change our demeanor, or the energy we're putting off is different. It's adult energy. We engage with the person in a way we expect, they expect us to engage. They engage with us the way we expect them to engage, right? It's that I'm like this because you're like that and you're like that, right? It's like that again, right? And that's because we don't have this, this solid always walking around in that self. I mean, if we were, if a true self nature existed, the persona we had as a child we would always be that. We wouldn't get to grow into adulthood and get to grow into elderhood. Now, sometimes we cling to our persona of a particular time in our life. And that clinging to that persona often is what keeps us stuck and leads to suffering. The teachings tell us differently. It's saying that everything is impermanent. Nothing has a true self nature, right? It's saying don't get caught up in the fact that this is how I'm always going to be. Be able to see that the way I was in one situation, maybe for my survival, this is what needed to manifest. I needed to manifest like this. But now the conditions are different. And so with the eyes of mindfulness and the practice of mindfulness, we can see I don't need to be holding onto this nature of who I am, because that doesn't have to be me in this moment now. Because I am about change. My moods change, right? Just, you know, the moment-to-moment change of the mind, as we practice and we get more still and we pause more, we get to see our minds, how quickly it changes from moment to moment. This morning I got up, I forgot about the time change. I'm walking around all like, oh, so I, you know, just so early and I have all this time. And then finally I picked up the phone and I looked at my watch, and then the watch didn't, you know, update itself. And so I looked at the phone and thinking, oh, what happened? And then there's this moment of, you know, like, Oh my gosh, it's a whole hour. And then I feel my body like contract, like, oh, it's a whole hour later. And then I realize, oh, okay, it's a whole hour later. And then I breathe and then I relax. Right? So just in that moment, nothing external happened in that moment. The only thing that happened was I realized something. So my mind, which is all internal, right? My mind looked at the clock, saw the time, and then it shifted. I went from being very, and it was so noticeable because I was so relaxed. I was like, oh yeah, it's so great. I have all this time. And then I completely contracted. So right, just right then, you know, we go from being this kind of person in this mood to this kind of person in this mood. And then with the practice, we get to see ourselves as we keep manifesting into our different selves, right? And then the practice allows us to cho choice. Practice gives us choice. So I got to breathe and I got to think, like, okay, fine. So it's an hour later. It's all right. You know, like, it's okay. But that moment of constriction came from some historical thing of time, right? For me, it's not like I had an appointment at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. that I had to meet. It was just the idea of losing an hour that sent me into another self. But with the practice of breathing and calming and being able to observe myself, I could then look at myself and think, oh, this is just your mind reacting to something. So just take it easy, just breathe. And then we moved out of that. And then there I was again in this relaxed state, just like that. But having this practice, right, it gives me choices. It gave me an option, right? This seeing ourselves is what the practice is about. And what it does is it puts us back in choice. So the seeing, am I today engaging in a behavior or with behaviors that served me when I was 6 or 12 or 21, you know, something like that? And is that still the way I want to behave? Maybe not, you know. And the idea that we are empty of being permanently a certain way, it's such a freeing. It's what actually allows. That's why the teaching says emptiness allows everything to be possible, because then that means we can become who we need to be in any moment, because we're not this self that, I mean, we stay like that, right? People tell us, oh, I'm surprised you chose that because you always choose this, you know, just friends, family, when we even choosing a kind of food or saying something, right? Oh, you all, yeah, you must be thinking this now because you always do that. So we are in effect often assuming and behaving as if there's no there, that we are that there's no opportunity to be different, that we're this permanent solid self, that Maricela, you're like this, and so wherever you go, you're like this, and it locks us in, right? It locks us in. And so our path of freedom, right, is the discovery that we're not a solid self. It's a discovery that everything is possible because there is no solid self, that everything changes. It allows our moments of pain to look at moments and experience moments of pain with an openness, a little more spaciousness, because everything will change. This is not a solid, concrete, innate self thing. It's made up of these not other elements, right? Tai would say, the flower is made up of non-flower elements, right? The wind, the seed, the farmer, the water of the rain and the soil. And so can we see the flower? Can we see all the non-flower elements? Well, it's the same thing with ourselves. Can we see, can I see the non-Maricela elements in Maricela? And in this way, I can truly discover and explore so many different ways of being, not just the way that I may have been cultivated to be based on the environment and certain conditions, right? And so that just opens this whole possibility. It's so freeing. Because now I'm not just that. I can be everything and anything. The possibilities are endless. I don't have to be just the same sorrow and grief from something that happened many years ago. I can look with eyes now and see what is different now. So maybe that response doesn't have to be the same because this is different. So now it's like, wow, I don't have to do this. I don't have to suffer in this way. I can wake up just in that, right? Just in that one suffering, I can transform that one suffering and wake up to another way of being out of that suffering. That suffering can become transformed to something else, a healing, a different way of being, a non-suffering being. Now, I think what happens often is we are really attached to the self of who we've become, right? We just kind of landed there. And that's, you know, I mean, especially when we speak to maybe our elders and you point something out. Well, I know I hear this a lot. That's just how I am, right? I mean, I know you've heard this. You know, you point something out. I've been like that all my life. I'm not going to change now, right? These are the stories. So we've been hearing these stories from the people, our loved ones, our elders, our aunties, our communities. And so it's natural that we, in this path, non-practitioner path, have just really seen ourselves in that way and believe ourselves to be there. But that's the beauty of this path of awakening. That's the beauty of practice. Is in the seeing, we can become aware of how we are in any moment, and we have that choice. And that choice exists because of this very deep teaching of emptiness and non-self. That in any moment, however we're showing up, even though we're showing up in that way right now, there's endless possibilities right within that. There's the endless possibilities, right? The Prajnaparamita Sutra, the Heart Sutra, it says form is emptiness, emptiness is form, right? Okay, form, that's the way we're showing up. That's the thing, the material thing that we can grasp and say, box, human, cup, bell, right? But emptiness is form. So what it's saying is that in this bell is also emptiness. It is non-bell, right? So we call it bell because that's the colloquial thing. It's a label. What the teachings are saying is don't get caught up in the label. There's a deconstruction, an investigation, an exploration of that label. And what that does, it allows us to see what else is there, the non-bell elements that are there, right? The non-cup elements, the non-flower elements that are there. That's the emptiness part. It's like it's empty of a separate self. There is no bell. We have to be able to see that. Form is emptiness. So that's the form is emptiness. And the emptiness, once we see the emptiness, it allows us to see the form in a different way. So now the form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And that all of who we are and everything in the world is like that. Now, we don't like to teach and talk about emptiness and non-self too much because everybody thinks it's too complicated. And I actually don't think it's too complicated. I think it's just that we're not used to thinking like this. If we were used to thinking like this, it would be like, oh yeah, and second nature, of course. So what does that mean? That means we have to start thinking like this. We have to start thinking in the way the teachings are trying to get us to understand this path of waking up. And the crux of the path, especially in the Mahayana tradition, which is the Plum Village tradition, is in these sutras of the Diamond Sutra. Yeah. Prajnaparamita, the Heart Sutra, the Lotus Sutra. So I want to also share that Ubuntu, right, which is I'm like this because you're like that, it says the same thing. It's also interbeing. So even though I'm sharing about it from a perspective of Buddhism, I also want to share that spirituality across the ages have also and always understood this understanding of you're like this because I'm like this and I'm like this because you're like this. This reciprocity. It's always been like that. And then different spiritualities and, you know, cultures and places where we are interpreted and teach it in the way that's more cultural to that area or that region. But I wanted you to know that this is not unique to Buddhism. This understanding that emptiness is made is real. We wait on each other. I become like this. When I speak, I may have an idea in my head. When I meet someone and speak to them, that person elicits or evokes something else in me. And I become different than what I was in that moment before that being that became elicited in me. You see? So we're waiting on each other to become who we are. So I'm going to stop there. And invite a bell and invite you to let it all go. Just let it all go. It's recorded. And so we may want to listen to it again. And if there's, you know, things that still don't make sense, I invite you to take a look at the Heart Sutra and the Diamond Sutra.